We're playing a lot of Prince today. It is his birthday. Happy birthday to Prince. That's our opening line here on History Today. Prince was born today. This is also, actually, tomorrow is the day that the Mormon Church announced that blacks would be allowed to hold the priesthood. Thank you. I'm sorry. this is also the day, more importantly in some ways, in 1893, that Mahatma Gandhi began his first act of civil disobedience that began in the modern era, the long chain leading up to Martin Luther King and beyond, and into Palestinians and into people in South Africa and throughout the world of nonviolent resistance to oppression. And it began on this day in 1893 with Mahatma Gandhi. And that's something we want to remember, which I think is very critically important. So also on the day in 1930, by the way, the New York Times agreed to capitalize the word Negro. They used every other epithet you could imagine and would never capitalize it. The NAACP forced the issue and forced the New York Times, being one of the first papers in the country, to capitalize the word Negro and even use the word Negro back in 1930. This was also another very critical day in 1965. This was the day that Griswold versus Connecticut was decided, and that was the Supreme Court struck down the anti-birth control law, made it unconstitutional. The Connecticut was trying to deny women the right to use birth control in Connecticut, and that was handed down in 1965. So not that long ago that your sisters could not get birth control when they wanted it. This was also the day, a horrendous day that all of us remember, when James Byrd Jr., a 49-year-old man, black man, was killed by three white men, and they beat him. They dragged him behind his car, and he was dismembered by being dragged behind his car. And that happened in 1998. Those are the days, actually, the days that we found that we thought really were most important to talk about here in human history. And we're going to go talk about some things that will be history maybe tomorrow, but not today, which is what's happening in Baltimore and Maryland right now. We are joined by Krishana Davis, who is a multimedia journalist, and he writes for the Afro-American. Krishana, great to have you back.
Thank you. And this is my first time on your new hour as well.
This is your first CC?
Yes.
See Hassan? See?
That's how he treats us when he goes to morning time.
Hassan Giordano, that's that voice of Hassan, founder of GCOM Media and publisher of DMV Daily. Good to have you here, Hassan.
It's always a pleasure, Mark.
Congratulations on getting your little mug shot at the White House.
Yeah, it's in my element.
Well, Hannah is with us, president and CEO of the New Park Heights Community Development Corporation. Will, great to have you back in the studio.
Good morning. Glad to be back.
Will's mic's not up, but just got to do that. There we go. Now try that again. Hi, Will.
Good. Good morning. Glad to be back, Mark.
Good to have you. You don't have to call in. Now you're here. So, folks, join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page. I'll be checking here in a moment, both Facebook pages. Or tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We're going to cover a number of topics, starting with what we talked about yesterday, which we're really going to be pushing over the next few weeks, which is this new ACLU marijuana study that was on arrest and marijuana arrests in Baltimore, and which is pretty horrendous. Of course, the jails. The Harbor Place development issues, and the police board is called irrelevant and ineffective. It's amazing to me that some people are just coming around to that understanding. As long as I've been around, it has been irrelevant and ineffective. But I won't editorialize anymore at the moment. We'll turn right to our guest. 410-319-8888. First, are you all aware of the ACLU study that showed that African Americans are six times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than whites, and in Baltimore, almost is one of the worst offenders in the country. Maryland, mm-hmm. Baltimore are fifth and sixth in the worst numbers in the country for arrests, and in Baltimore City itself, 96% of all the juvenile arrests for marijuana are black kids. I mean, that's. Because we know that white kids don't smoke dope.
You're right. Sure.
So, you know what, Will. Mark, when you look at the numbers, and the study was based on 2010 numbers.
Correct.
But when you look at it and you see that 7,000 people in the city of Baltimore alone, and of that number, only 500 were white. So about 6,500 were African American. Then that is a serious issue, and when you look at the racial disparity numbers. So.
Well, I mean, I think it's not a surprise. I mean, I think that just kind of reemphasize what we already knew. But I'm glad to have those numbers because I hate when people say there's more African-Americans in prisons than there are in colleges, and that's just not true. That's not accurate data. So this data actually, again, reemphasizes what we knew. The problem exists is, and I would love to see, Mark, how many of the African-Americans compared to whites and other races are stopped and frisked, who are put on the curb with their pants down and everything else, which I think if you look at the arrest powers and what they do to African-Americans in Baltimore City compared to Baltimore County, they just don't do that. They don't put you on a curb in the middle of the rain, you know, take off your clothes in the middle of the street. They do that in Baltimore City. Those are the things that I think that the Commissioner Batts would greatly appreciate actually targeting and fixing here in Baltimore.
And I think it's not so much a policy issue. Like, you know, there's been this decriminalization of marijuana law that Senator Bill Zirkin was trying to pass in the legislative last year. But it's more of like how law enforcement are going to handle it. So between racial profiling or stop and frisk, that's what's becoming the issue. So if you're going to look between, let's say, Baltimore City and Ellicott City of how blacks are treated or, I mean, any to like a rural area and the city, I mean, there's definitely a disparity there. And I mean, even when you look at the numbers from 2001 to 2010, they kind of did a overview data, and there was a 69% increase in how many blacks were arrested for marijuana, but only a 13% increase in the black population. So there's definitely something wrong with the numbers.
Well, I mean, I personally think in this particular bill, and this particular study was a very important study, one of the most critical studies I've seen in a long time. Because we've always speculated about this, but we never knew the facts. And they did a 50-state study. They studied every county in America. And another report's coming out next week from ACLU Maryland that's going to focus just on Maryland and Baltimore to really spread those numbers out about what's happening in this state. And, I mean, what it shows is that in counties, even in Maryland, where blacks are, African-Americans are, in a real minority, like Garrett County, the majority of arrests for marijuana are of African Americans. And Cecil County, home of the Klan, is the same thing. And I say that because it is where the Klan's headquarters were in Maryland for a long time. We always thought about it in that way. Cecil was more than that. I know that. But the reality is that this is one of the things that's clogging up our prisons. This is what's putting people in jail. People were languishing in jail over marijuana arrests and not over serious crimes. And I think this is what I'm waiting to hear, and I'll see what you all comment on this real quick before we move on to something else, what we're going to do is send out a question to everybody in the city council, to the mayor, to the attorney general, to the state's attorney, to the chief of police, to the police department, and ask them to comment on what this study means and how they think it should change policy and how it should affect their work. I mean, I haven't seen anybody in any position of power, elected or appointed, reply to this study yet.
And that's the sad part, Mark. It shouldn't take for Mark Steiner to have to ask the question for them to actually reply. You're right. Nobody in a leadership of power has come out African-American otherwise. Now, Greg Bernstein was at the NAACP criminal justice meeting last month, and he said out of his own mouth, I'm tired of prosecuting people with marijuana joints and stuff like that, and that's not what our focus should be, and that's what I'm getting away from. But I'd be interested to see if the mayor, Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, who a couple years ago issued an executive order to tell police to stop pulling over illegal Latinos in Baltimore, if she'll issue an executive order to tell them to stop arresting young black men and women because of a joint or very minor charges of marijuana.
Well, Mark, I think Hassan raised another good point. One is how this will affect policy if they're willing to step up and change some policy, but also it's also the treatment of these young African-American men in the streets of Baltimore. Are they willing to address those issues that go a step further and say not just address this study, but address how the treatment of young black men in Baltimore is also?
I mean, I think there definitely has to be a policy change. I mean, that's kind of like the first go around. So there has to be a law enforcement change, but there has to be a policy change as well. I mean, I really wonder if that decriminalization bill would have gone through, would have made a difference. I mean, it would have made just a citation, a civil fine, $100 fine for less than 10 grams of marijuana, which is like a joint or two, as that's what experts call it. So, I mean, I'm just wondering if that would kind of be like the first, you know, bare foundation to, I guess, fixing the issue, and hopefully that will push law enforcement to do something different and change their policies.
Well, folks, what do you think? At 410-319-8888, maybe if it is legalized, we wouldn't have this problem at all, because we can have that debate another day, because now our son doesn't agree, but that's okay.
410- Kurt Anderson heated that day, wasn't he?
410-319-8888. Your thoughts. Let's move to some of the topics that are really also grabbing the headlines at the moment here in our area, and it has to do with the continuing crisis at the state prisons. And where we are with this, and what your thoughts are on all this. Every week we've tried to have a different set of people on who have been affected by this. Ex-felons have been on, police officers have been on, we had correctional officers on earlier in the week, and trying to kind of get to the heart of what people think from their perspectives of this. And I'm just curious your analysis of what we think is going on. Krishana?
I mean, I think that in a city like Baltimore, where the police are arresting people at such large numbers, when you get to the point that, you know, there seems to be a complete distrust in what's going on in the criminal justice system, it really puts a damper on, I think, like, people's relationships with police officers, because you see all the things that are going on in the criminal justice system, and it kind of makes you wonder if, you know, the respect level for citizens and the police officers and the criminal justice system as a whole, I mean, it definitely makes you wonder, like, what's next and how can they curb it? Because really, I think that it's kind of created a issue where that trust that you have in the system doesn't really exist there anymore at all.
Well, and Krishana makes a very good point. I think when you look at the linkages between the arrest rates and also how the jails are also being run and where the people that are running the jails are being recruited from, you have the entire culture in that same facility, in those same facilities. So the same base that you're recruiting correction officers, unless you change the standards for those officers, you're recruiting from the same pool that you're arresting the criminals in. And so I think that becomes a problem. But then when you look at the larger issue, this is not nothing new. What happened over at the prisons and what was discovered at the jails is not new. This is not a new phenomenon. They treat it like it's new, and you hear about it now because it's all over the media. But this has been going on for decades, and especially at the Baltimore City Jail and the Baltimore City Detention Center and the State Penitentiary. This is not new. So the thing is there are people that have known about this that are in the administration that have known about this for years and probably for decades and did nothing about it until it was exposed.
You know, I got to do and define it two ways. I'm a former offender. I was in the prison systems, the penitentiary, the city jail, and everything. So from that perspective, I would definitely say, as Will said, this is nothing new. I've always said, I don't believe you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I have the utmost 100% confidence in Secretary Maynard. I think when he came in, he saw the elements that were happening in the jails, especially city jail, and he did something proactively to stop it. He's the one who reached out to the federal government to have the audits, to have the findings, to have the investigation. And we have to really tackle, Mark, the human and civil rights violations these inmates are going through. Taking showers with cockroaches falling off you during your showers. Mice running up in your cell, eating your food. The conditions laid out today in one of the audit findings even shows how bad it is living in there, and that officers don't have a level of understanding that their rights are being violated in terms of even holding cells and how dirty it is. From a political standpoint, I think it was handled very badly. We saw the audit was done in February during the session. The governor did not want that to come out at the time because he was trying to pass policy like the death penalty repeal and the wind tax and the gas tax that he did not want to be derailed because of this. And then we saw, instead of it going before the judiciary committees or the judicial proceedings in the Senate or the House, which has the oversight of these prisons, it went to some made-up oversight committee, a joint committee that no legislator ever heard of until they created it for this. And I think you're having somebody who deals with health and government or somebody who deals with the environment as a legislator on these committees when they have nothing to do with it. You need the people who can proactively make policy changes from the judiciary in the House and the judicial proceedings in the Senate, and you just don't have that.
I mean, one of the things it was alleged, Van Smith wrote a piece in the city paper, an article about this in the city paper. And he alleges that they have known about this since 2006 and 2007, around the Tashima McFadden case, where he said a CO orchestrated a brutal attack on this inmate It was gang tied to the Black Rilla family, that the person who he accused was Antonia Allison, one of the CEOs who was fired. And this is back in 2006, July 5th, 2006, when this occurred. And that documents, he claims, he alleges, the reporter, that alerted corrections officials back in those 2 years, 2006, 2007, that at least 16 COs were suspected of being affiliated with gangs. And that was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a surprise.
It's like we don't really want to fix things in this. I mean, and one of the things you were talking about was the police review board that we were going to deal with. And, you know, you got the council president saying it's a paper tiger, but he's oversaw this since he's been in the council. Even though it's appointed by the mayor, he's been around forever. He could have proactively done something. And obviously he's been a paper tiger with unconstitutional bill, local hiring bills and stuff. But needless to say, you have 9 members that are appointed. You have one member in particular who's been on there for 14 years. You're only supposed to be on there for 6 years for your term. Been on there for 14 years, 8 years more, and they're 88 years old. How much are you? See, the problem is they're not putting people in there that are going to address the problems and come up with solutions that can solve the problems here in the city of Baltimore. They're putting political appointments there that will make sure that the Democratic Party comes first and not the people. That process needs to change.
Folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888. Yesterday, when we were talking about marijuana, the phones were off the hook. People were outraged about this, and we want to talk more about that in the coming weeks. But your thoughts about where our city is going? 410-319-8888 with our three guests here. You just heard Hassan Giordano, founder of GCOM Media, publisher of DMV Daily, Krishana Davis, who writes for the Afro-American newspaper, and Will Hanna, president and CEO of New Park Heights Community Development Corporation. And we'll go to Facebook here. No, people have been writing about other stuff on Facebook, but not this. We'll get back to that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll get to these calls coming in just a second. And the other issue that is popping up in the city, as people are writing a lot about, it has to do with Harbor Point's tax deal. Mm. And this is also one of those things that's hard to put your hands around. It's not – see, people want to make things simple. Nothing is simplistic. Is it good or bad for – Carl Stokes has a taxation committee, thinks that the money to build the roads and the infrastructure around the development should be paid out of the city budget. Well, then if you do that, then where does – what gets cut out of the city budget to do that? Should it be done at all? And other people are not – what they're not talking about is on the site where they're building this was a toxic dump. Nobody's talking about that issue at all. What they're about to build there. But what were you about to say, Will?
To that point, Mark, I think we should definitely wait on those environmental reports, not even just phase one. So you should do full environmental studies there. But at the same time, this is the continuation of where we still see things being done and redeveloped in the harbor. Why couldn't we get those same tax deals uptown? Why can't we get those same tax deals in East Baltimore, developers that want to come in but can't get those tax breaks that you're seeing that's happening down in Harbor East and now that's happening down at Harbor Point?
So I'm going to go phones here, but Catherine just left us. Should we go to Pam instead? She's not ready. But Catherine, come back, and the rest come back. I thought it was coming. We are coming. 410-319-8888. But here's the question I have. Let's go to Pam. Then I'll throw my question out because I do want to get some callers in here. Pam, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Pam, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In reference to the statement about arresting blacks in reference to a limited amount of marijuana, I just have a question that, you know, it would be lovely if marijuana was legalized, but then I ask the question, if we had 2, maybe 3 black males or females standing in front of, I'll just say, your residence, smoking a joint, I just really would want to know, what would you do? Where is it possible that smoking that joint can lead to something else that would be a concern of you? I think that when we think about the limited amount of drugs that may be legalized, we don't think about where we reside or if we want that in our community and if that can lead to other crimes. Now, I do understand, I really do agree that we shouldn't waste our time on things that the time you finish the paperwork, you know, you look the people there out, so you tied up everybody, the officers, the commissioners, what have you, and then there's taxpaying dollars. But at the end of the day, what are we saying? Are we being true to ourselves?
Okay. Let's wrestle with that for a minute. Go ahead, Hassan.
I would love to answer, Pam, and that's a great question, and it's about the balance of how we deal, especially with our younger generation. We had this over in Cameron Village where I lived at, and they would hang out in front of the residential block, you know, and these are teenagers who were around. They were smoking pot near the fence and just kicking the ball. And so instead of calling the police on them and targeting them, what we did is I went out and we had a conversation with them. They knew the little kids in the neighborhood, and they protected them. And so what we did is said, look, you can't be here because you're here till 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. You're making noise out here, so this is what we're going to do. We took and put a basketball, bought a basketball goal, put it down at the end of the block where there's no residents. You go down there, play basketball, smoke your weed, do whatever you do to a certain period of time at night. And that eliminated the whole thing. Now the neighbors are happy and people are happy.
Nobody wants people drinking beer, whiskey, smoking a joint,
right,
having a martini, right, sitting out in front of your house all night long. Nobody wants that. So I don't think it makes a difference whether it's reefer or whether it's booze.
I think the issue that Pam raises is a question that a lot of people that live in the neighborhoods deep in East and West Baltimore would have those concerns. Are we giving a pass to the young people and saying, okay, this is okay to do this? Or are we saying that, you know what, we need to make sure that it's our responsibility, just as Hassan said, we even have to take control of the neighborhood, or we have to give them something else to do.
But we're talking adults. Nobody wants kids, period, drinking and smoking. I mean, or smoking anything or drinking. I mean, that's not what you want your teenagers to be involved with. I don't care who they are or where they are. I mean, adults, we're saying, should have the right to do what they want, not
children.
Children shouldn't be out there. I mean, you want your kids doing that when they're 14, 15 years old? I don't think so.
But I mean, I think that even if it became decriminalized, it would be something that would have to still be regulated. Because, I mean, clearly it could create those types of issues and environments. So there would have to still be, like, parameters to where you can and can't do it. Just like with smoking, you can't smoke in a restaurant. You can't smoke in buildings. So there would still have to be parameters around it.
Right.
But I think we still have the issue of if this is legislated and it is decriminalized, I think that with the problem that we already have with youth and marijuana use, the numbers that are increasing with youth and marijuana use, I think that it may send a different message. It may send a mixed message to young people.
I was going to say, but I think Hassan raised an interesting point, though, because it's not just about, you know, calling the police and mm-hmm. saying, like, you know, there are people in front of my yard, but the community then instead stepping up and saying, just going out and talking to the youth or, you know, having that dialogue instead of, you know, necessarily thinking of calling law enforcement.
We're going to take a brief break and come right back. When we do come back, we're going to go right to Alex in Baltimore County. You're the next caller up. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, Prince's Birthday. Happy Birthday, Prince. I remind you, support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic, offering tag and title services to members and non-members. Information available at AAA.com/tags. Apologize for Mid-Atlantic. I didn't know that the read was there, but I see it. We'll get it Monday on time. Number here is 410-319-8888. We're here with Krishana Davis, and all the people on the phone hung up. Call back at 410-319-8888. Krishana Davis is multimedia journalist, writes for The Afro, Hassan Giordano, founder of GCOM Media, and publisher of DMV Daily. Will Hanna is president and CEO of the New Park Heights Community Development Corporation. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I was going to answer something you said earlier, Will Hanna. So let's for argument's sake say that, that people wanted to have more development dollars go into Park Heights or some other communities in Baltimore. I mean, I could see people arguing, does that have the same... Once I said, look, we need to redevelop our communities so people have a better neighborhood to work in and live in and create a new space, other people would argue, but that's not going to bring money into Baltimore. It's not going to bring jobs into Baltimore. It's not going to bring in, you know, people are not going to locate their offices in Park Heights and Belvedere. So where do we put our money? I mean, that's the argument people would make.
Well,
not saying they're right or wrong. I'm just saying that's
the other part of the argument is, do you allow the communities to still be in the deplorable conditions that they're in? What has happened? Now, this is fact. What has happened is that there has been 20-some million dollars spent in communities like Park Heights. $6 million was on a commercial development that – I'm sorry, $7 million on a commercial development at Park Heights and Cold Spring, of which the city never acquired the property and then took the money and used the money for something else. So that would have brought – that was an opportunity to bring jobs there, bring some major development there, and then maybe you could have – gotten that opportunity. But it's not a priority. The priority becomes, let's keep everything downtown, let's keep the money downtown. That was a significant opportunity that the city, this was a state bond, $3 million in state money, $3 million that the city did the match, that this was an opportunity to bring some jobs, bring some businesses, and do a lot for that community. That's the hub of where all of the negative activity goes on in that community. So I just use that as an example.
Absolutely.
But I think from a business standpoint, though, you have to look at that at the end of the day. People want to get a return on their investment. So when developers are coming in, they want, if they're going to get a tax break or incentive to build, the city wants to be able to get something back from it. So the comparison has kind of been like comparing what the city gave to the Hilton. So in the next 15 to 20 years, they're saying that this development will bring $120 million into the city. So, I mean, that's a significant chunk of money that then could be reinvested in other things if distributed correctly, if not mismanaged, but, you know.
And if go ahead, Hassan.
No, I was just saying, it's based off the perception versus the reality. And as Will said, the TIFs and the pilots that we see these big corporations getting all the time from the city, if small businesses like mine and yours or other people's who are here could get those same tax breaks, it would mean the world to them. I mean, you have small businesses who are suffering. You get, they get a 6-cent bottle tax. They can't afford that. It's down at the restaurant Sabonis. That hurt them tremendously. But that wouldn't hurt a very big corporation. And then you have a local hiring bill that we know is unconstitutional. The concept is great, but the problem exists is this. You're not even doing that for your own police and fire department. The majority of them don't even live in the city of Baltimore. And how would that affect small businesses? That's not what's being discussed. That's not what's being talked about. But the people are feeling that on the local level.
And I would say, I definitely agree with Hassan on that point, though, because even with the increase in the minimum wage, like, people aren't looking to see how that's going to impact your mom and pop shop. But they have to then, you know, have a 27% increase in what they're paying people. That money has to come from somewhere.
Not to mention Obamacare, the requirements that Obamacare is going to have.
That's
October.
Not, you can come back and argue that. Though I'm not a fan of Obamacare, I'm not a fan of the Republican criticism either. 410-319-8888. Alex in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Hello, sir.
Hi, Alex. Welcome.
I got this comment written down real quick.
All right.
I've been listening to these conversations on 88.9 and 89.3 WPFW since 1997.
Okay.
That's about 16 years. These problems haven't gotten any better. They've only gotten worse. Now, there's a lot of how and why comments I can make, but I think it's all got to start with the black community in this country stopping their support for the Democratic Party. They've been given all kinds of paper rights, like things written on paper, but since the 1960s, but in actuality, it's all only gotten worse. And that's my basic comment. I got to go into work.
All right.
Guys have a nice day.
Alex, take care, my friend.
Hallelujah. Right. Praise the Lord. That's what I'm talking about.
The day the Republican Party actually does something African-American community is the day that I will give up on the radio and give the job to somebody else. And I know that's not going to happen.
Thank you, Alex.
Will? Before Hassan goes on, what do you think?
I think that I can be somewhat impartial to this. I think that because there are some considerations now with a lot of Democrats that are saying, you know what? What have we gotten for our investment in the Democratic Party? What have we really gotten? And if you look at the neighborhoods around Baltimore City and in some cases throughout the state, a lot of people question what have they gotten for their investment. I think that you can look at the other side of it and say, you know what, are there some political advantages for people to look at other parties, not necessarily Republican Party? You know, there are a lot of, there's a growing trend of independents that are growing in the state of Maryland. So people look at where do we get the more bang for our buck? And I think that it starts with making sure that we like you can elect Democrats. You can elect Republicans. Make sure you elect the right people and make sure you elect the people that are going to be in position to do something for you and be effective.
Go ahead, Al.
As an independent and the chairman of the independent movement of Maryland, not Republican Party. Though I do have a lot of friends over at the Republican Party.
You're wearing it on your chest.
Absolutely. Nicolay is our supporter to this, and she's a Baltimore City resident and will not move out of this city. You know, I think Alex makes a great point. When you talk about the paper promises of the Democrats, one of the major ones that I've ever seen was Thornton. Thornton with the education funding mandate. The unfunded mandate that they put in 2002, it was an election year that they did this during the legislative session. There was the only time, and I'm going to explain this to people, when a bill comes before the legislature, there's called a fiscal policy on it. That tells you what that means for Maryland, where you're going to come up with the money, how it's going to be spent, and what that means for the legislature and the Maryland economy. This was the only unfunded mandate that Democrats passed on purpose, knowing that they couldn't do it at that time, but they did it because it was a campaign season. Well, I mean, those are paper promises.
Therein, to me, lies the contradiction in A, because Republicans, on the other hand, wouldn't fund schools at all. I mean, they would cut school funding. They've done in every state that they control. Texas has some of the worst schools in the nation because Republicans want to cut the funding for schools. Democrats pass Thornton and don't put money behind it to make it work. So, I mean, and that's part of the problem. And with the Republican Party in terms of the African-American world, I'll just listen and turn this over to Krishana to jump in next, is that one of the reasons many black folks did not want to vote for Democrats before the 1960s was because it was the party of the Dixiecrats as well in the South. Well, the Dixiecrats are now Republicans. They form the basis of the Republican Party. The racist white South is now no longer Democrat. It's Republican. So all that's part of the reality as well. It's a complex reality, Krishana.
I think one of my biggest criticisms, no matter who your party is aligned with, whether you're on the city, state, local level, doesn't matter, is what are you going to do to fix it? I think everyone wants to talk about the issues, and they talk and they say that they understand or that they can identify with the issues. But, like, what programs or initiatives are you going to put in place to fix the issues? And I feel like so many times on both parties, all sides, people don't really have any real plans to put in place to fix anything. And that's kind of been one of my biggest things. Like, whenever I speak to someone or I'm interviewing someone or trying to get some information for an article, I'm always asking them, okay, great, so you understand the issue. What are you going to do to fix it? And I think so many times people don't have real issues or policy. So it kind of boils down to the constituents making sure that their people have real programs and policies.
Because we don't often want to put the real issues, deal with what the solutions would take. Everything from, let's say when we have put money into cancer research for breast cancer. Let me just put this as an example. It's all about genetics. Nobody puts money into what may be the environmental basis for a lot of the cancers we face, pesticides, herbicides, and the rest, because if we did that research that came out with it, it would mean society would have to address issues that the powers do not want to address because of how much money it would cost. If you look at housing in Baltimore, having this housing dialogue now going on between various parts of this community who have responded to our last show, and one person wrote in, and it was a really interesting argument, outlining how much it costs to demolish a house at $17,000 a house, or $50,000 a house if it's a house in the middle of the block, and five times that amount to rehab the house. So the vacant houses in Baltimore, we're talking almost $500 million. Where does the money come from? How do you do it? That's the reality we have to face, not the reality of, you know, why are you shaking your head no, Will?
Because I don't agree with it.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't agree that it costs $17,000 to tear down a house, and we have some numbers. I run a community development corporation. Yeah. I can tell you it does not cost $17,000 to tear down one house. I can almost tear down half a block of houses with $17,000.
That I want to see.
Okay. You can do it. You can tear down houses literally at about $3,500 a piece. Literally, $3,500 a piece. So And the rehab costs, depending on the type of structure you're building and how you rebuild those structures. If you do modular construction, you can do those houses at $40,000 to $60,000 a piece. Anybody can Google that and research it. Modular homes cost $40,000 to $60,000 a piece, and they take 12 weeks to put in. So they're constructed at a factory and shipped here on a truck and put it in and install the house.
But I think the bigger question is, as Mark was saying, is that's fine. Whatever the math is, it still costs money to demolish the 47,000 vacant houses.
Or to rehab them
and put them there.
Absolutely.
Where does the money come from in the budget? Because we just don't make money here in the city of Baltimore, and we have to balance a budget. So is the mayor going to cut rec centers again or cut pools in order to do this? Where does the money come from? And that's the sad part is more solutions are had on the Mark Steiner Show on EAA than they're done by the elected officials we put there to come up with solutions to our problems. And that is the sad reality, not only in Baltimore, not only in Maryland, but throughout this country.
But I feel like at some point, even if you have to do short-term cut things to get things done, you have to do it, though, because you're going to keep seeing the same issues in a cycle over and over again. And that's why Baltimore is experiencing so much poverty, because people aren't dealing with any of the issues.
Well, I mean, even like as we did on the show yesterday on the marijuana and the report from the ACLU on marijuana arrests, if the money was not spent on marijuana arrests, we would have hundreds of millions of dollars to put into other things here in Baltimore and around the state of Maryland. And if you invested more money up front for kids instead of putting them in jail and had community corrections, you'd spend less money on a prison system, more money on effective programs that maybe keep people out of jail and reform the city. But nobody wants to talk about the difficulty in transforming our budgets so they really affect change. We don't want to do that. We don't do that.
Well, that's why I might criticize her a lot, but Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has took on the tough issue, especially with the pension system. People ain't going to like what she's doing. But we've went through this pension system with fire department, the police department, and local government for so long, and we're pretty much bankrupt and have nowhere else to go. She has to do what she's doing. She's making the tough calls now to save us in the future. Those are the type of things we need to have from all of our legislators, not just one person.
And we have like 2 minutes left, so you can have a thought. Go ahead.
Well, I think the other part of that is as our legislators are quick to jump to attacking the pensions and that of the working people, I think they also need to be just as quick to say, you know what, we're going to audit housing or we're going to audit this agency. We need to be just as quick to do that. If you're willing to increase taxes and put bottle taxes in and do that in one swoosh, do those audits just as quickly.
Absolutely. But she was opposed to that when Carl Stokes put it in. It was like, okay, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Which one is it? You know, so you're absolutely right. We need that, especially with all the agencies and departments.
We should be auditing
and it's having people in the place that actually know what they're doing to do the audits correctly as well.
Because right now, you know, I sit on the library board, the Eli Pratt Library Board, and we had a meeting the other night, and one of the things we talked about were audits of all the city agencies in Baltimore. That gets audited, they audit Enoch Pratt. 1% of the budget. Less than 1% of the city budget. That's what they want to audit. I said, this.
That's ridiculous.
Was that one of the first four?
The housing, Department of Public Works, police.
None of that. The library. Let's see how much they're spending on books this year.
No, that's right. We can't have more books for our children. What are you talking about? It's always good to have you all in the studio. It's always lively and fun and enjoyable. And Will Hanna. We'll keep you around as long as you are not officially declared president and CEO of New Park Heights Community Development Corporation. And I know Krishana is not going to declare because she's declaring moderating panels when they show up. Multimedia journalist who writes the Afro-American. Good to have you in the studio, Krishana.
Thank you. It's great to see you again.
And my friend Hassan Giordano, we have not forgotten you. You're always welcome on this show, founder of GCOM Media and publisher of DMV Daily. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we're going to talk about Syria. Azim Turan, who just left Syria, has been in the demonstrations, knows what's going on, is going to give us a first-hand look at what's happening in that country and why it's important. Stay with us. We'll be right back.